Chapter 33. The sun was shining calmly on a scene of complete havoc. Smoke was still billowing across the burnt grass in the wake of the theft of the ashes by the cricket robots. Through the smoke, people were running, panic-stricken, colliding with each other, tripping over stretchers, being arrested. One policeman was attempting to arrest Walbagger the Infinitely Prolonged for insulting behaviour, but was unable to prevent the tall, grey-green alien from returning to his ship and arrogantly flying away, thus causing even more panic and pandemonium. In the middle of this, suddenly materialised for the second time that afternoon the figures of Arthur Dent and Four Prefect, who had teleported down out of the Heart of Gold, which was now in parking orbit around the planet. "I can explain!" shouted Arthur. "I have the ashes! They're in this bag!" "I don't think you have their attention," said Ford. "I have also helped save the universe," called Arthur to anyone who was prepared to listen. In other words, no one. "That should have been a crowd-stopper," said Arthur to Ford. "It wasn't," said Ford. Arthur accosted a policeman who was running past. "Excuse me," he said, "the ashes. I've got them. They were stolen by those white robots a moment ago. I've got them in this bag. They were part of the key to slow time envelope, you see. And, well, anyway, you can guess the rest. The point is, I've got them, and what shall I do with them?" The policeman told him, but Arthur could only assume he was speaking metaphorically. He wandered about disconsolately. "Is no one interested?" he shouted. A man rushed past him and jogged his elbow. He dropped the paper bag, and it spilt its contents all over the ground. Arthur stared down at it with a tight-set mouth. Ford looked at him. "Want to go now?" he said. Arthur heaved a heavy sigh. He looked around at the planet Earth for what he was now certain would be the last time. "Okay," he said. At that moment he caught sight, through the clearing smoke, of one of the wickets, still standing in spite of everything. "Hold on a moment," he said to Ford. "When I was a boy..." "Can you tell me later?" said Ford. "I had a passion for cricket, you know, but I wasn't very good at it." "Or not at all, if you prefer. And I always dreamed, rather stupidly, that one day I would bowl at Lord's." He looked around him at the panic-stricken throng. No one was going to mind very much. "Okay," said Ford wearily, "get it over with. I shall be over there," he added, being bored. He went and sat down on a patch of smoking grass. Arthur remembered that on their first visit there that afternoon, the cricket ball had actually landed in his bag, and he looked through the bag. He had already found the ball in it before he remembered that it wasn't the same bag he'd had at the time. Still, there it was among the souvenirs of Greece. He took it out and polished it against his hip, spat on it and polished it again. He put the bag down. He was going to do this properly. He tossed the small, hard red ball from hand to hand, feeling its weight. With a wonderful feeling of lightness and unconcern, he trotted off away from the wicket. A medium-fast pace, he decided, and measured a good long run-up. He looked up into the sky. The birds were wheeling about, a few white clouds scudded across it. The air was disturbed with the sound of police and ambulance sirens and people screaming and yelling, but he felt curiously happy and untouched by it all. He was going to bowl a ball at Lord's. He turned and pawed a couple of times at the ground with his bedroom slippers. He squared his shoulders, tossed the ball in the air, and caught it again. He started to run. As he ran, he suddenly saw that standing at the wicket was a batsman. Oh, good, he thought. That should add a little. Then, as his running feet took him nearer, he saw more clearly. The batsman standing ready at the wicket was not one of the England cricket team. He was not one of the Australian cricket team. He was one of the robot cricket team. It was a cold, hard, lethal, white killer robot that presumably had not returned to its ship with the others. Quite a few thoughts collided in Arthur Dent's mind at this moment, but he didn't seem to be able to stop running. Time suddenly seemed to be going terribly, terribly slowly, but still he didn't seem to be able to stop running. Moving as though through syrup, he slowly turned his troubled head and looked at his own hand, the hand that was holding the small, hard, red ball. His feet were pounding slowly onward, unstoppably, as he stared at the ball gripped in his helpless hand. It was emitting a deep red glow and flashing intermittently. and still his feet were pounding inexorably forward. He looked at the cricket robot again, standing implacably still and purposeful in front of him, battle club raised in readiness. Its eyes were burning with a deep, cold, fascinating light, and Arthur could not move his own eyes from them. He seemed to be looking down a tunnel at them. Nothing on either side seemed to exist. Some of the thoughts that were colliding in his mind at this time were these. He felt a hell of a fool. He felt that he should have listened rather more carefully to a number of things he had heard said, phrases that now pounded round his mind as his feet pounded onward to the point where he would inevitably release the ball to the cricket robot, who would inevitably strike it. He remembered Hakdar saying, "Have I failed? Failure doesn't bother me." He remembered the account of Hakdar's dying words, "What's done is done. I have fulfilled my function." He remembered Hakdar saying that he had managed to make a few things. He remembered the sudden movement in his holdall that had made him grip it tightly to himself when he was in the dust cloud. He remembered that he had travelled back in time a couple of days to come to Lord's again. He also remembered that he wasn't a very good bowler. He felt his arm coming round, gripping tightly onto the ball that he now knew for certain was the supernova bomb, which Hakdar had built himself and planted on him, the bomb which would cause the universe to come to an abrupt and premature end. He hoped and prayed that there wasn't an afterlife. Then he realised there was a contradiction involved here, and he merely hoped that there wasn't an afterlife. He would feel very, very embarrassed meeting everybody. He hoped, he hoped, he hoped that his bowling was as bad as he remembered it to be, because that seemed to be the only thing now standing between this moment and universal oblivion. He felt his legs pounding, he felt his arm coming round, he felt his feet connecting with the holdall he'd stupidly left lying on the ground in front of him, he felt himself falling heavily forward, but having his mind so terribly full of other things at this point, he completely forgot about hitting the ground, and didn't. Still holding the ball firmly in his right hand, he soared up into the air, whimpering with surprise. He wheeled and whirled through the air, spinning out of control. He twisted down toward the ground, flinging himself hectically through the air, at the same time hurling the bomb harmlessly off into the distance. He hurtled toward the astounded robot from behind. It still had its multifunctional battle club raised, but had suddenly been deprived of anything to hit. With a sudden mad outburst of strength, he wrested the battle club from the grip of the startled robot, executed a dazzling banking turn in the air, hurtled back down in a furious power dive, and with one crazy swing, knocked the robot's head from the robot's shoulders. "Are you coming now?" said Ford.